Brunn stalked along the streets of Q-Town, trying to push her anger back down her throat.
Ooh! Ooh, that stuck-up sanctimonious little bitch! That prissy backcountry chit! Her family probably slops hogs in their bare feet! Just because I grew up rich, just because I can talk about sex without squinching up my face!
In one corner of her mind, she knew this was unfair. Esme was not an ignorant girl, but an accomplished older woman. Not much older, but an academy graduate, a fleet officer, a combat veteran. Brunn would have been glad to have Esme's experience. She wanted Esme's respect.
But not enough to turn into a frumpy sexless joyless!
Esme wasn't joyless, though. Brunn didn't want to be fair. She wanted to be angry, righteously angry. Esme had had no right to ream her out like that, no right to say she had no moral sense. Of course she had moral sense. She had rescued Lady Cecilia, for one thing. Even Esme granted that. Aside from the requisite helling around that all the people in her set went through in adolescence, no one had ever accused her of being immoral. She hunted through her past, finding one instance after another in which she had acted in ways she was sure Esme would approve. Not that it was any of her business. She had protected that little Ponsabar girl at school, the one who had arrived so scared and so easy to bully. She had told the truth about the incident in the biology lab, even though it had cost her a month's detention and the friendship of Otala Moraline. She had been polite to Great Aunt Trima, even when that formidable old lady had regaled guests at the Hunt Ball with tales of little Bubbles cavorting naked in the fountain as a toddler. She'd had to fight off entirely too many of her schoolmates' brothers after that one. But she hadn't turned against Aunt Trima. She and Rafa on the island, they had saved each other's lives. She could not, however, find something to plaster over all the accusations.
Well, so what?
Her standards were different. That didn't mean she had none. Just as her inner voices began to talk about that, she decided she was thirsty and turned into one of the bars that lined the street. Diamond Sims, the sign read. Brunn assumed it referred to fake diamonds, with an implication of world weariness. Inside, the tables and booths were full of men and women who might as well have been in uniform as in the mostly drab ship suits now the favorite casual wear for the military. The way they sat, their gestures, all revealed their profession. A few, less than a third, were in uniform. She didn't see any of the students from the courses here. Not that she'd known any, but those in her own section anyway. But she hadn't wanted to see anyone she knew, anyone who would wonder where her bodyguards were. She wanted new faces and a new start, and new proof that she was who she thought she was. With that in mind, she edged past crowded tables to the one double seat empty toward the back. She sat down and touched the order pad on the table. Stenner Ale, one of her favorites, and put her credit cube in the debit slot. She glanced around. On the wall to her right were framed pictures of ships and people, and a display of little metal bits arranged in rows. A faded red banner hung up in the far corner. She could not make out the lettering from where she sat. A waitress deposited her frosted mug and the bottle of ale and gave her a saucy grin.
What ship, hon?
I'm on a course.
The waitress looked slightly surprised, but nodded and went on her way to deliver the rest of the tray to another table. Brunn realized that there was another room, apparently private, adjoining the main room. And on her left, the long bar, the same matte black as the stuff covering ship's hulls. Could it possibly be a section of the same material? Above it, suspended from the high ceiling, were ship models. Brunn recognized the odd angular shape of a minesweeper among the more ordinary ovoids of the warships. And behind the bar, the expected mirrors were framed with... Her eyes widened. She knew enough about ordnance now to recognize that every frame had once been part of a functioning weapon. In a quick glance around the room, she saw more and more. It was as if the inside of the bar were made of the salvaged pieces of wrecks. She felt the hair rising on the back of her neck, on her arms. It wasn't real. It could not be real. No one would really... But her eye snagged on a display at the near end of the bar. Paradox. That name. She could not forget that name. And here was a plate, an ordinary dinner plate, its broad rim carrying the same dark blue chain design she'd seen on all the dinnerware aboard Admiral Serrano's ship, with the four lozenges that had surrounded the name Harrier. Here, the design inside the lozenges was slightly different, and the plate, sitting on a stand she was suddenly sure had been made of other debris, was brightly lit by a tiny spot that also illuminated the label for those who were too far away to see the lozenges. Beside it was a stack of crockery. Brunn looked at the mug holding her ale, suddenly feeling almost sick. No, it wasn't Paradox. But now that its frosting had melted, she could see it was etched with some design. She squinted slightly. RSS Balrog. She had been drinking from dead men's cups. She was sitting on a seat made from salvaged bits. Her elbows rested on a table made of... She wasn't sure what, but she was now sure it was something that had been part of a living ship and had been salvaged from a wreck. She looked for clues, and there, in a dull-finished plaque set into the tabletop next to the menu screen, she found it. RSS Forge, enlisted bunk 351. A tiny button to one side caught her eye. She pressed it. The menu screen blanked, replaced by a historical note. RSS Forge had been lost 32 years before in combat with a Benignity strike force. All hands had died. This fragment had been salvaged 28 years ago and identified by the stamped part number, still on the underside of the table. At the time of the ship's death, enlisted bunk 351 had been assigned to Pivot Lester Green. The table's pedestal, the note went on, was formed of a piece of shielded conduit from the same ship. The two chairs were both from Forge, but one was from the enlisted mess, and the other had been that of the senior weapons tech serving the aft starboard missile battery. The five people who had taken that position during Forge's final battle were all listed. Corporal Dancy Alcorn, Sergeant Tarek Sennett, Corporal Lors Patin, Corporal Barstow Bohannon, Sergeant Gareth Mahari. Bad enough that all the names were listed, real people who had lived real lives and died a real death. But Mahari, she had known Methlin Mahari.
Some relative?
Each name was linked, she realized, to some other information. She didn't want it. She didn't want those names to be any more real than they already were. But Mahari, she had to know. She activated the link. Gareth Mahari had been 26 when he died. His family tree, spread across the screen, with fleet members in blue, was more blue than gray. His parents, both now deceased, one in combat, had been fleet. Of his four sibs, two were active duty fleet and two were married to fleet members. Methlin Mahari was his sister. Hard to think of that tough veteran as anyone's sister. One of his nieces, her niece too, was named after her. So there would be another Methlin Mahari someday, and with both parents and aunts and uncles in fleet, there was every chance that she would go into fleet. Sudden curiosity, and an escape from the weight of tragedy that was making it hard to concentrate, sent Brunn back to the main menu. Sure enough, below the lists of drinks and food, she found data access choices. From this table, she could check on the publicly accessible records of anyone in fleet. Esme. She wondered if there were other Sweezes in fleet. She entered the name and waited. Up on the screen came only one name, and fleet's choice of data for public consumption. Name. She had not known that Esme's full name was Esme Ana Luisa Susanna Sweeza. Planet of origin, Altiplano. Family background. In a few crisp sentences, she was informed that the Sweeza family was one of the three most prominent on Altiplano, that Esme's father was one of the four senior military commanders, that her uncles were two of the others, and that the fourth was considered to be a Sweeza choice, that the military influence on Altiplano's government was profound. Brunn tried to tell herself that a senior military commander on a backwater planet was nothing special. Her father's militia, back on Cerealis, was just a jumped-up police force. Its commander, though given the title General, had never impressed her as the regulars of Fleet did. But Altiplano, she read on, had no seat in council. It had no family connections at all, which meant... She wasn't sure what, but she suspected that a General Sweeza had a lot more power than old General Ashworth. Of Esme herself, there was little. A list of her decorations, with the citations that went with them. Conspicuous gallantry, outstanding leadership, outstanding initiative. A list of the ships she'd served on. Her present assignment, to Training Command's Junior Officer Leadership Course.
Well...
Brunn sat back, aware of tension in her neck and shoulders, the feeling that she'd got herself in well over her head in more than one way. She returned the screen to its default and thought of ordering a snack, but it would come on a plate from some wrecked ship. She didn't think she could face that. As it was, she already had tears in her eyes.
Something wrong?
Brunn turned. He was stocky, heavy shoulders thick with muscle, his bald head deeply scarred. His eyes were scarcely higher than hers. He was in a hover chair. Brunn kept her eyes from dropping to see why with an effort, but that gave him a clear look at her face. Out of the scarred face, brown eyes observed her with more insight than she liked. His wide mouth quirked.
Lady, you're not Fleet and you don't know what you've gotten yourself into, do you?
The lady threw her off stride for a moment. In that pause, he jerked his head toward the farthest angle of the back.
Come on over here. Let's get you sorted out.